You know, I've been concerned for a while because this is really some of the most challenging material that we're going to be dealing with in the whole course. And I've been concerned for a while that it might be difficult for people. Can you give me a little feedback? Are you finding it inspiring or frustrating? Or
this material is terrific.
Terrific. Okay, good. Excellent. That's okay. But just because I say that's excellent, that doesn't mean that I will frown upon someone who says this material is preposterous. Anybody want to add anything to that? No.
Definitely agree.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's very interesting material. But the challenge, it seems to me, consistently is to find a way to activate it, you know, and that's something I want to work with today. So we've picked up a couple more people, so let's get going on the content. And actually, what I want to do, I want to start in the middle of the reading, or at least not right at the beginning. I want to look at this question of invariable time. So as you know, the sections that we're reading right now for this week and last week, the theme, the uniting theme for these three chapters is invariable time. And it seemed to me a good place to start. And in fact, you know, the more I work through it, the more I realize, well, I just need to keep refining my understanding of what Rinpoche is has in mind, or that's probably not a good way to say it, but what is this discussion of invariable time, and what is the possible relationship we can have to it? So, at the bottom of page 107, Rinpoche talks about invariable time, and he says, he's talking about momentum, and let me just say here, by the way, that several weeks ago, I think maybe even in the last session, we talked about momentum when we sort of approached it one way, and then we approached it a different way. I think there's a lot to be learned in studying momentum, the whole notion of momentum and how Rinpoche uses it. And it's a study that I haven't really done. So I encourage others, if this were a graduate program in TSK, I'd say that would make a great dissertation topic. But it's not, and I'm not asking you to write a dissertation. But it's something definitely worth exploring, because he presents it, as he so often does, from different facets and different aspects, and the meaning shifts, but it stays consistent. It's really very interesting. But here he is talking about the momentum of time, and he has actually just raised the possibility, which we'll come back to later, that perhaps time can proceed without momentum at all. He relates that to great space. We'll talk about that later. But he goes back and looks at the question of momentum, and he says, well, in order to have momentum, you have to have points. In order to have points, you have to have an invariable point. And he specifically talks about that as a starting point. So this has to do with things that you know we're familiar with generally. I mean, we're always saying that the kind of common sense understanding, if you can call it that, of how the universe began. We always say, well, there was this point of origin, you know, the Big Bang is how we talk about it in sort of pop science, but also regular science, as far as I know. And so that's the starting point. And he says, well, there has to be some kind of starting point like that. And actually, as I was reading this, I was thinking about how I've heard it said in the past, and I think about this sometimes, that if you're trying to solve a problem and there are all sorts of variables, you get overwhelmed, you get frustrated. So what you have to do is you pick one point, one of those variables, and you hold it steady. And then you look at everything in terms of that one invariable. And that's not quite the same thing, but it helps me to think about what's being said here when you say there has to be an invariable point. So then Rinpoche goes on to say that this invariable point, seen in terms of the temporal order, is something that's there. It's always there, and in that sense, it's eternal. So invariable takes us to eternal. And he doesn't say too much about eternal here, what the meaning of eternal is. In a lot of Western thought, people are sometimes careful to make the distinction between what's eternal and what's endless. So what's endless, you could say, is within the order, and it just never ends. It goes on and on and on. Maybe you could even say it never had a beginning, but that becomes complicated. But eternal is something different from that. Eternal is something that stands outside. Ron asks a couple of questions here. Is invariable the delusion of a fixed point? Yeah, I think so. So, you know, there's two ways to look at the notion of invariable here. One is to say that it's a problem in the sense that you know, you're trying to fix something. You're trying to create this first point. And so invariable time is this problematic move that we make, this thing that we posit. However, there is another sense, and we'll look at that in a little while, in which the invariable is pointing towards something, if it remains open, is pointing towards something that could really free us from our commitment to the momentum of the temporal order. And so we'll want to look at both of those. And Ron says, yeah, so in the Buddhist perspective, you know, in Buddhism it's always said that samsara, this ordinary realm, from a TSK perspective, you might say the temporal order that we inhabit, is beginningless. And it is, you know. I mean, that's the Buddhist understanding. And something similar is being pointed to here. There has to be a kind of invariable. So, you know, I don't like to speculate about Buddhism in terms of TSK so much. I don't think it's helpful, and Rinpoche has really warned us against it or away from it. But I think you could say, you know, what's invariable in samsara? Maybe you'd say, well, it is in fact samsara. It is in fact the ongoingness, the beginninglessness of samsara. I don't know if that's too helpful, though. And Ron goes on to ask, so provisionally invariable? Well, I don't know. That might be a way. I'm not going to try to play with that right now. That might be one way of saying it. In any event, we have this idea of a starting point, which is invariable time. And it's what grounds all measurement. You know, it's outside the order, but without the order, the temporal order, without the invariable point, there couldn't be such a temporal order. So Rinpoche introduces that, and he says that the invariable as eternal, this is at the bottom of 107, confirms the categories and positions of the temporal order. So now he wants to ask, well, what? How could you do it differently? You know, what if you weren't going to rely on invariable time? And he says, at the top of 108, He says, suppose that the positions, that is, the positions of the temporal order, suppose that those shifted. And of course, a shifting that's not just moving to a new position. So the shift that he has in mind here would be one of these radical shifts that TSK often makes. The shift, so that positions become something other than positions. And so you might think he's saying, well, we need to drop positions, and we've talked about that before, or specifically quite some time ago, we explored this notion that I think comes up in Love of Knowledge of viewing positions not as positions but as acts of positioning. And that's related to this point, but I don't think it's really the point that he's making here. He's saying, because he doesn't really go there. He doesn't say, well, we want to go to a non-positioned way of being. He's saying, if you can imagine the possibility that we could shift from a position-centered understanding, let's say, to something else. We don't even need to know what that something else is. It's just not positions, right? He says, suppose that positions became something other than positions. And then the point that he's making is, he says, in order for that to happen, there has to be a time in which it's possible for positions to become something other than positions. Right? And that time, the time that empowers that shift, opens up a new possibility. It's free from conventional categories. It's even free from the distinction between variable and invariable. He offers here a really, I think, very wonderful expansion of the goal. Sometimes we forget, well, why are we doing all this? Why are we doing this analysis? And in some general way, I'm sure that everybody has a sense of that, or you wouldn't still be here. You wouldn't be involved. But here he puts it in a very beautiful way. He says, perhaps this shift to no positions. Now notice he's not saying arriving at a place of no positions. He's saying the shift, the timing that makes it possible to shift to no positions. Perhaps the shift to no positions would free knowledge from experience and the weave of language and from all the hidden presuppositions that separate knowing from invariable time. So here's one place where suddenly invariable time seems to have a positive sense to it. If we could unite knowing and invariable time, that might be interesting. We might learn something. But I'm more interested right now in the first part of that sentence. We would like to be able to free knowledge from experience. And I think we know from previous work, why experience is a limiting category. Right? So we'd like to be able to free knowledge from experience and from the weave of language. And of course, positions are intimately connected with language and with propositions, right? Propositions. You take a proposition is lets you establish a position. That's what it's for. That's what it's a proposition. So if we were able to make this shift, and again, it's the timing that makes the shift possible. That's the focus here. If we were able to make that shift, maybe we would be able to free knowledge from experience, from the weave of language, and from all the hidden presuppositions. So that's a very interesting possibility that he expresses here. And then to end the chapter, there's just one more paragraph here. Ron says a proposition is like a prop that props up a position. Yeah, I think that's right. And pro just means for, though. So a proposition is something that lets you, it's there to let you have a position. I'm not sure that that's exactly the it's not the only meaning, certainly, but that's kind of the sense that comes up. Okay, so then in this last paragraph, he gives what you might think of as an exercise, and I want to use it to develop an exercise, but not exactly the exercise that is suggested here, because frankly, when I read this, I thought, well, that's cool, but I don't know how to do that. So then I thought for a while, and I thought, oh, maybe here's a way to at least play with it. But let's take a look first at what he says. He says, let us return to the original invariable point. So we've got some invariable point. Let's say it's the beginning of the universe. Okay? And imagine that point expanding indefinitely, infinitely. As it grew, it would swallow up points and positions. It's a way to... this is a way to open up or make a shift. So this is kind of a description, you could say, of the timing that would let us shift from positions. And in this timing, there would be this infinite expansion, right? So as it grew, it would swallow up points and positions. Eventually, the whole that is established through measured out rhythms would disappear into this opening of the point. So he's describing a kind of an opening through expansion. Points all the way back toward expanding and condensing, I guess. At that point of complete openness, would the universe of the temporal order collapse? How could we tell? How could we tell that the collapse had occurred? And what could we say about the time within which it took place? So as I said, you might think of this as an exercise. I tended to see it when I read it more as kind of a thought experiment because I didn't see how to work with it. But I'm about to suggest a way to work with it. But here we have a couple of other suggestions from people coming in. Ken says the exercise transcendence of pointings is a big help here. Yeah, so I'd have to think that through, but that's probably, it is in effect what's being talked about here, is a transcendence of pointings. So that probably is very helpful. And Ken also suggests a couple he looks at this word swallow, So Rinpoche writes, if we imagine the invariable point is expanding infinitely, it swallows everything up. And that sounds pretty aggressive, like Jonah and the whale, that's what comes to mind. And he says, well, is that the, or if I read your comment correctly, Ken, is that the same as accommodate? Or what if we thought of it as accommodating instead of swallowing? So with swallowing, well, okay. That sounds like a very worthwhile proposition. Whoops, I used a bad word, proposition, no. It sounds like a very interesting way to approach. And Ron says, but isn't invariable substance? When we talk about invariable, doesn't that seem like we are positing, another word like a position, we are positing substance? And yes, we are, and I think that is exactly what's problematic about the invariable. So what would be, how could we free invariable time or the invariable point? We aren't really talking about invariable time, but we're talking about an invariable point. How could we free that from substance? Well, at the end of the previous paragraph, he suggests, there are all these hidden presuppositions, again the word position, that separate knowing from invariable time. So if we brought knowing into contact with invariable time, how would we do that? Okay, that's maybe part of the exercise. Then maybe invariable time would be freed from substance. And Ken says, and I have to call attention to it because it's a nice play on words, he says, he had proposed instead of using swallow, use the word accommodate, and he says, accommodate is easier to swallow. That's a nice, I like that. and then he raises this question, how do we free invariable time? He says, could we free it by seeing it as dimensionless? And Ron thinks that's a good solution. That's his aha. In some way, you know, we need to free the invariable from the presuppositions, which I guess you could say establish its positioning outside of and as invariable and as eternal. So, okay, all of these possibilities, I think, are at play here. And it's a great discussion because it's always so important and valuable to see how much is in play all the time in TSK. There's never just one fixed position being expressed. So here are a couple of comments on this. I'm going to wait on Caroline's for a moment and go to Ron's because it's still connected to the previous conversation. He says, this is an interesting way of seeing knowledge as cut off. Yeah, he's suggesting here, and you know, we haven't talked about knowledge specifically for a little while, but of course it's always in play also. And he says, so Ron is saying, yeah, there's a way in which knowledge is cut off, and there is. And we want to be able to free knowledge cut through what cuts off. I don't want to play with that too much, but so yes, there is this possibility of a great knowledge, let's say, and he comes to this in these chapters, but ordinary knowledge is cut off from that possibility, and we are talking about a way to engage it. Okay, now Caroline asks, is accommodation accurate? So she's championing swallow, I guess. Is accommodate accurate? It seems that the expansion is actually dissolving what was there priorly. Okay, so I don't know if maybe swallow isn't a good word for that either, but so you're saying, well, isn't it a more kind of a dissolving? That seems right, except, you know, what does it dissolve? It dissolves the substantiality. Does it wipe away, you know, when you've done that dissolution, are you left with nothing at all? I don't think necessarily. I think that you're seeing a what's there, but it doesn't make the same claim to substance. Mm-hmm. And Caroline goes on. I see you nodding now, Caroline. This is I think it's nice to have video, you know, Caroline's videos here, and nice for me to be able to see people reacting visually, and I think if you all have your video on, you can see that also. She kind of agrees, I guess, with what I was saying, but she was justifying what she said because of the word disappear lower in the paragraph. I don't see it at the moment. Oh, okay. Eventually, the whole that is established would disappear into this opening. And then he raises, I guess, the question we're looking at right now. Does that mean that the whole universe would collapse? And how could we tell? Yeah. So maybe the collapse wouldn't have the structure of collapse that we like to imagine it does. Michael raises the question, if we live in an expanded universe... You wrote expended, which every now and then, Michael, you type something that you didn't necessarily mean to type that's very provocative. And I'm assuming you meant expanded, but expended is kind of good too. If we live in an expanded universe, we don't have to imagine a point swallowing or accommodating all other points. We are that accommodation within which beginnings and ends are not so central. Yeah, that's nice. We are that accommodation. We are that. It's another way in which it talks about it here. You could say, you know, that non-established openness within appearance. So an expanded universe. I'm still thinking. You mean expanded? You're speaking here of the expansion that is described in this paragraph, right? A point that expands infinitely. And so if you say, that expansion, presumably it happens in a certain time, a certain kind of time, and we are investigating, you could say, the nature of that time. But it's certainly not a time in which there's a before and an after in the usual sense. So if you say, you know, first there has to be this act of expanding, I don't think that's quite accurate. It's the time that would allow for this kind of thought experiment expanding would leave us in or would find us, is better, in a universe in which there is a complete accommodation, right? And as you write, Michael, in which beginnings and ends are not so central. And Ken says, such an expansion implies momentum. Well, that would be a question to explore, and it goes back to the dissertation that I asked someone to do. Does it imply momentum in the usual sense, or is it a different kind of a momentum? Certainly, he says, if we imagine the point expanding indefinitely, yeah, I think that when we start with the act of imagining, it's natural to think of it in terms of a momentum. Whether that's where we end up, I don't know. So now I want to look at a way of working with this possibility of expanding that I think makes it more concrete, or at least, as I said, when I came to this and I thought, well, how could I do this? And I didn't know. And then I realized that the exercise for this week actually is closely related. So Ken also pointed to transcendence of pointings, but the exercise for this week, which was called Instant Replay, is closely related to this discussion, this possibility of an expanding that swallows up or accommodates or dissolves points and positions, right? And so I thought we could do exercise 19 with a kind of an appreciation that it can be understood as an expanding in which all existing points get swallowed up. One specific distinction, or one interesting distinction between the exercise and the and this paragraph that we've been focused on for a few minutes now, is that the paragraph says at the very beginning, let us return to the original invariable point and imagine. So presupposition is, or the precondition for this imagining is that we return to the original point. But in exercise 19, that return is very much a fundamental part of the exercise. Right? You rewind the current situation in time. So let me go over exercise 19, but the idea here, and I'm not going to try to make the connection anymore, I don't think, because I've done about as well as I can. The idea is to do exercise 19 with this possibility of expansion in mind. So the exercise has review the history of a present situation that is somehow unsatisfactory. What are the positive elements in this history? No, let me say that differently. What are the positive elements in this history? So it's unsatisfactory, but there are positive elements. How do they influence the present? What forces counteract them? So there's some analysis at the outset. Once you are aware of both the positive and the negative, imagine that the specific sequences that comprise the history of this present moment could be rewound in time. That's the return, like a film or a tape being taken up on a cassette. Let yourself experience this rewinding, and then imagine that the same elements play themselves forward again toward a new and more positive combination. So that's the expansion. Do not worry about where this new unfolding will lead. Be ready to leave the world as currently given behind. Let the manifestation, or maybe we could say the expansion, be its own reward, observing it with appreciation. In this new unfolding, you are the partner of a newly available knowledge, an honored guest of the cosmos. I'm going to skip, not guided by a fixed way of thinking or acting, so no positions or positionings. You can cherish this present life as luminous. So this is exercise 19 with the glow of this final paragraph on page 108 as a kind of a guide. So let's try doing that. And because it's a relatively complicated exercise, let's take a little longer. We're always kind of stingy with time. But let's take 7 or 8 minutes to do this, okay? okay, let's come back together. So I'm very curious to see what your experience was, is. I'm going to start with a comment that I think came from before the exercise by Caroline, a question. And then we'll go from there, because I see, well, okay. So Caroline asks, how does zero figure in this? It seems the original point is actually zero, which allows the complete refreshment of the outcome of the process. Yeah, well, zero is another one of these turning points. You know, we talked last time a little bit about, I guess I actually didn't have time to go into this last time, but zero takes form as the shape that we call zero, and the form is at the same time pointing towards a limitation and pointing beyond it. And yes, I think that refreshment is a nice word. It's possible to refresh whatever manifests. So Caroline writes with regard to the practice, I think, finding the original point is itself a challenge, because as one reaches that, it is seen that this point is actually the result of a whole series of preceding points. It can't be done linearly. Somehow, the original point is available at any point of the rewinding process. That's good, well put. And not exclusively at the imagined beginning. This may sound overcomplicated, but looking closely at this exercise seems to reveal a world of things I hadn't noticed before. So I agree that from a certain perspective, if you go to the starting point, if you rewind to the beginning, it seems like in a linear sense you have to go to the beginning of the universe because everything leads back. Another way to say that or think about it might be to say, well, there's always some story we're involved in. After all, the practice asks us to look at a particular situation and that is unsatisfactory. And so within that situation, there is a starting point. Even though if you poked at it, if you kind of looked at it in what you thought of as an objective way, maybe that isn't the starting point. But the story has a starting point. So there is a place to look there. But I like very much your point that the starting point isn't available just at the beginning. It's always available, you could say. So Eliana writes, when I'm relaxed, I feel my body filled with space, and the borders of my body seem to dissolve, leaving in the background all the substantiality. This spacious quality, married with awareness, allows an expansion of perception and experience. It is like space projecting space with no beginning and no end. To expand the experience is like allowing it to continue. Okay, well, that's a very nice description. I it would be interesting to see, does that connect to this specific exercise? And what you describe here is lovely. Does it come up when you do this exercise? That would be my question. Karen writes, great play of allowing, big relief, nothing seems to be impossible, feelings of gratitude. Well, that's so nice. And you all know that people look at TSK and they say, but it's so abstract, or it's so hard to understand, I don't know about the hard to understand part, but clearly when people engage the vision, it's not abstract. So that's a very lovely description. Feelings of gratitude. Thank you. Michael says, it seems that a spirit of adventure and starting afresh, stepping forth from zero, was alive in the founding of a European society in America. If this new world had proceeded without the theft of land from Native Americans and the enslaving of fellow beings, blacks, how different modern-day America might be. So that's the, what's the word, the circumstance that, the unsatisfactory circumstance that you were working with, okay? How much deeper and resonant words such as sharing, investment, democracy would sound. Yeah, it's, you know, Rinpoche, for many years, Rinpoche has given a talk on the 4th of July, which is, of course, Independence Day in America. And the talk always has the same basic theme, but he develops it. But and that is the tremendous freedom that America offers and the opportunity and how grateful he is that he's had the opportunity to fulfill his vision in America. And every now and then he touches on this other side that you're pointing to. You know, it's that's only a part of the story. It's the part, you know, when we're celebrating, it's the part we like to bring into play. But yeah, there's maybe you could say that really is what this exercise invites. You know, what if we could rewind all that history, all that negativity? There certainly are positive elements too. And then play it forward into a kind of a luminous possibility. I was just reading something the other day about the discovery of the New World and the impact that it had on the Old World. It was kind of speculative, it seemed to me, but it really made me think about the fact that for European culture, discovery of America was you know, they called it the New World, and we should really give full weight to that sense of newness. It was like, you know, something completely unexpected had opened up, and that because of that, a whole lot of other things could be called into question. And yet, what happened instead, or in addition, was that a lot of the old structures, and maybe even in exaggerated form, I'm thinking of slavery, were immediately imported into this new world. You know. So yeah, it is a very good example of exactly what we're looking at. Ken writes, a shift in time, linearity to open roundness time, time without dimension. So yeah, in the background we have this question, what is this time? What is this time that allows us to shift away from a world of positioning? I got a little distracted by the comments. So that's a nice, you know, that's a nice description of at least one possible way of understanding this. And then Ken comments on Michael's comment, just a little pat of approval. Caroline asks whether there is a plan to publish the 4th of July talks. Well, interesting that you ask. There are plans, and we'll see. And John writes, at first I'm focused on the development of a sequence of experience and its attendant concerns. Right, that's exactly where the exercise asks you to go, right? But expanding that specific development into invariable time, so that's a nice way of meshing together, which is what I was suggesting we do, the thought experiment at the end of this chapter and the exercise. So expanding that specific development into invariable time is such a strong shift into a free and light-filled openness that the development doesn't matter. Any experience can be expanded in this way and become a free-floating phenomenon within luminosity. Well, that's very nice also. It's interesting to me that doing this exercise has really stimulated a lot of evocative imagery from those of you who commented. That's great. somehow, I mean, I think you'd say, well, then we can see that the exercise is working in the way one might expect, is working toward this, what can I pick out here? Is working toward this point of complete openness, right? In which time itself is transformed. Okay, well, we're basically out of time. I want to make one more point, and then anything else I'll just bring up in what I write for next week. And it just goes back to, on page 107, Rinpoche makes a point that doesn't so much fit with the rest of the chapter. Well, I mean, it does. I'm not saying it shouldn't be there. But it's just a point we can mention separately, and I think it's worth mentioning. And that is his discussion of perspective. It's the second full paragraph. And he says that, maybe actually it's good for me to think, so why is it in this chapter, right here? Maybe it's because there's a possibility here of moving beyond perspectives. But what he says is that at the ordinary first level, or the understanding that the first level allows, I think is a better way to say it, we don't think of perspective. We just think we know how things are. We don't question our own perspective. And the example, you might say, of discovering a new world is an acknowledgement that our perspective may be more limited than we had thought it was, even if historically maybe it didn't turn out that way so much. But in any event, ordinarily we think that what we see is what is real. That's what he says here. And then he says in the second level, by focusing on momentum, so there's another place where this term momentum comes up, we can see that we are caught within a particular perspective, that comes with the territory. It's the logos, it's the temporal order. And then he says, once we realize that, we can ask a question that challenges the perspective, and that leads him to what I promised we would get to, so I guess it's good that I'm getting to it. That leads him to this point of saying, well, what if we just dropped momentum? There isn't any dynamic of momentum. Which is equivalent in a way to saying, what if we dropped the temporal order? The field communique, the logos, these are the terms that tend to cohere. What if we drop those? And then he says, suppose, for example, that time presented only the invariable openness. So there's invariable being used in a way that ties it back into openness, and we've talked about that. The invariable openness of great space. Would time itself alter? In a subtle way, would it become more than timeless? And then it's on the basis of that speculation, which he doesn't pursue as such, that we're led into this whole discussion of invariable time, which is most of what we've been working with. I'll just call your attention to the beginning of the next chapter, where this connection between the invariable and the open is played out a little further. He says, when points and positions disappear, and we've looked at the different words that he uses, and disappear is one of them. When points and positions disappear into the non-rhythm of an infinitely open invariable, momentum vanishes, it seems time is transformed. So an infinitely open invariable, in which we arrive at this possibility of a knowledge free from experience and the weave of language, right? We can, in a sense, you might say, we can reclaim the invariable, and then its real power is revealed. Okay, let's stop there for today. Nice session. Thank you very much.